Today is July 5th, 2017, and this is episode number 418 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO, and Brian Chaffin is still out this week on his, he calls it vacation, we call it work release program. So in his place today, I have Jeff Butts, and Jeff, this is the first time you've been on, and I'm really excited that you're here filling in today, so thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, anytime I've had you on Daily Observations, it's been just fun. So I couldn't find anyone better to spend an hour with as opposed to just 20 minutes. So cool. Yeah, so thank you for being here today.
Not a problem. I think it's the name.
It is.
Yeah. You know, Jeffs are always awesome.
That is so true. Yeah, it's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things other people try and cope with, and it's our cross to bear.
It is, but it's a glorious cross.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So anyhow, what that means is that today is an especially awesome show because you have two Jeffs to listen to.
That's right.
All right, so we might as well just hop into our topics.
Let's do it.
Okay. So first thing that I want to talk about, and every one of these topics that we have today are special in that I know that you have your own unique insight on them. And that's okay. Exactly why you're here and we have these topics. So we're going to start off with iPhone 8, Touch ID, and facial recognition. And so the short lead into this, so everyone's starting on the same page, is that there's a report out, I believe it's Ming-Chi Kao?
Yep.
From KGI Securities. And he says that there is no Touch ID on the iPhone 8. And the biometric security feature that we will see on that specific iPhone model is going to be facial recognition.
And as a result of that, the Twitterverse and the Redditverse have either exploded or imploded. I'm not sure which.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, although I do know that everyone seems to have their panties in a bunch right now. And I'm looking at this and I'm kind of skeptical because it seems to me like Apple is the company that could get Touch ID embedded in the glass figured out. And for those of you that aren't up to speed, the rumors and reports we've had for quite a while say that there is no home button, physical home button on the iPhone 8 to make room for more screen space.
Right.
So there were reports at one point that Touch ID would be a sensor on the back of the phone. Other reports have said it's going to be sensors embedded in the glass in the display. And now KGI Securities is saying, nope, there is no Touch ID. It's just the facial recognition. So why do you think people are flipping about this?
The biggest concern that I have heard is what it's going to do to unlocking your phone and using your phone for Apple Pay. Because what they're presuming it means is that you're going to have to hold your phone up to your face to unlock it and to authenticate the Apple Pay payments.
Which seems plausible because the camera needs to be in range of your face. The camera needs to be able to see your face to be able to register.
But the camera does have a wide enough lens that, you know, the angle could work out.
So you could take your phone and hold it out to the credit card terminal, and even at a distance, maybe have your face visible to the camera?
Possibly. I haven't tested it.
Right. Yeah. Well, of course, because this isn't something that we've had yet. One of the things that we've been seeing in the reports is that the front-facing camera is going to have some sort of 3D sensing capability, probably like an infrared beam that's bouncing off your face, and then a special sensor is detecting the 3D geometry.
Correct.
Of your face.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other concern that's been raised is, what about in the dark? And that's where I want to remind people that we have suspected for, I don't want to say months, but I think it's been months that we've heard that the 3D sensing technology will be infrared.
Which means you don't have to have lights on in the room for it exactly. to see your face.
Exactly.
All right. So in the dark, assuming this works well, wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
But I'm getting why a lot of people are kind of worried about this.
I do too, but at the same time, you know, is it all right to mention John Gruber on this show?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. John Gruber is taking the stance of, let's wait and see what more we learn before we get all worked up about it.
Okay, that seems like a reasonable bit of advice, especially because Apple hasn't said anything
exactly.
about features for the iPhone 8. So all these things we've been hearing, Touch ID in the glass, 3D face sensing, the dual cameras, what else? Like wireless charging?
Yep, wireless charging. They're all rumors.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, dag nabbit, KGI Securities is usually right.
It's...
Yeah. When was the last time he was wrong?
I'm trying to... I think he said last year that Apple was doing facial recognition, and that didn't happen. It doesn't mean he was wrong. It just means that...
They weren't ready.
That it wasn't ready. Yeah. So maybe Apple had planned on doing something like this last year. And
yeah.
And had to abandon it or postpone it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So I think John Gruber is right. Before we all get in a tizzy about this, we need to step back and wait and see what comes out, you know, like more information. And then especially yep. what happens when Apple actually shows us a product.
Yeah. Take a deep breath, let it out. And remember that Gruber's not afraid to call Apple out. If he thought there was something to seriously worry about here, he wouldn't be taking such a nonchalant attitude towards it.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if he's so much taking a nonchalant attitude as he's just taking a more pragmatic look at the information.
Sure.
Which is unconfirmed information.
Right.
All right, so that said, here are my concerns about mm-hmm. moving to facial recognition. First, how well is this going to work if I'm switching glasses? So I have three different pairs of glasses.
Right.
Sunglasses, computer glasses, and then the everything else glasses. What happens if I shave? How fast is it really going to be? Based on what Ming-Chi Kao is saying, this is going to be like crazy fast. So
right.
it's just like for practical purposes, as far as human perception goes, this will be essentially instant.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I still wonder how long is it going to take to actually do the facial scanning and matching. How accurate is it going to be? What happens if there's like fingerprint smudges all over the FaceTime lens or camera, mm-hmm. which is something that I know my FaceTime camera is always goobered up in some way because it's either fingerprints or it's like dirt or oil from my face from holding the phone up to my ear.
Right. Well, okay, so the companies that Apple acquired that do facial recognition,
mm-hmm.
Refresh my memory. What are the names of those companies?
I'm totally on the spot, but this is one of the points where Brian and I would start seeing things like Top Men, and this is how the sausage gets made, because we could have prepared.
Yeah, we could have.
And did not, but...
I want to say Prime Sense.
That sounds right.
Maybe. Hold on. Well,
I'm trying to do a search while we talk.
Okay. Yeah, you don't let me type when I'm talking. Listeners, he's mean to me when I type when I'm talking.
I know. I am a horrible, horrible person.
Well, so here's what I read on Reddit. Now, granted, you know, you got to take some of this with a grain of salt because people can say whatever they want.
Of course.
However, one of the hundreds of comments that I've read about this particular quandary on Reddit was from someone who claimed to have recently worked for one of these facial recognition companies that was acquired by Apple. Mm-hmm. It might have been PrimeSense. It might have been someone else. And this commenter said that the technology was fairly advanced when he was there, the facial recognition technology, mm-hmm. but it was slow. Now, if Apple has put their customary time and energy and resources into it, mm-hmm. it could have sped it up dramatically.
Sure.
And with regards to changing glasses, shaving, remember it's infrared. It's making a 3D matrix of your face based on infrared points. Mm-hmm. Now, what are going to be the most highlighted points in the infrared spectrum?
Let's see. So I'm assuming
the hottest parts of your face.
Yeah. So that would be like your eyeballs, your lips.
Your lips, your cheeks, mm-hmm. chin. And your hair does not have much heat to it.
Right. So your hair will essentially be invisible to the infrared.
Precisely. That's what I understand based on what I know of the infrared spectrum and infrared scanning. So if you shave, it shouldn't make any difference.
Okay, so that's one issue down.
If you change glasses, it shouldn't make any difference. The only problem that might come in is the fact that the lenses could reflect some of that light. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure Apple has thought of that. I'm sure they have enough people working there who wear eyeglasses that they've already tested it extensively.
Yeah, I would assume so based on other features that we have gotten in previous iPhone models.
Well, just base it on geek culture.
And geek culture.
Yep. I mean,
well,
if we wear glasses, we're more likely than not, we're in this kind of business in some form or fashion.
That's true. However, if you look at the VR space,
yeah,
glasses are not taken into account at all.
No, that's true. They're not.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I'm so down on VR. I mean, so over the holiday weekend, I found mm-hmm. out that there's a VR studio. Just like a walk-in studio on Pearl Street Mall in Boulder. So you can just go in and experience different VR hardware and apps. And it was really cool. And it was a lot of fun. But it also really sucked and was uncomfortable because I had to wear my glasses. And the people were surprised. They said, oh, well, you know, it's so close to your face, it shouldn't matter. No, it totally matters.
It totally matters. And I mean, we've talked about this on the Daily Observation, I think. You know, the biggest problem I have when I'm shooting is the fact that I can't wear safety glasses. Yeah. And so I end up getting burnt eyelids, which is so much fun.
That really, really sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we can only hope that if Apple really enters the VR, AR sphere in the form of a wearable device, that they find some way around that.
I'm assuming you're not going to have burnt eyelids. No, wait. Wrong thing for Apple to fix.
Yeah. No.
I would assume they will have found a way to work around it. And I know part of my resistance to accepting this as a real possibility for the iPhone 8 is seeing how facial recognition and iris recognition has worked for Apple's competitors.
Yeah.
And being able to do things like take a photograph of someone and simply hold it up to the camera and it unlocks the device, or doing like with the Samsung, is it the Galaxy S8, where it's doing the iris scanning and all you need is a photograph of their eye and then an old contact lens.
Right. The problem is they're not using IR. They're not using infrared. You cannot trick an infrared sensor with a photograph.
Which makes sense, because an infrared sensor, an infrared beam bouncing back off a photograph is going to register something very different than an infrared beam bouncing off of your face.
Yep. It's not going to get the depth. It's not going to get the heat. It's not going to get anything that makes up the three-dimensional matrix that the rumor mill has said Apple will be using for authentication by face.
Okay, so now comes the next thing, which is, are we all going to have to bend over our iPhones every time we buy something at the store?
Yeah, and that's going to be the trouble. Depending on how wide angle the camera is or where it's placed, because if I turn on my front-facing camera right now, I do have to have my phone at a pretty advanced angle towards my face to pick up my face. So that's going to be the problem. And, you know, if Steve Jobs were talking about this, he would probably give a workflow, you know, a method that you take in order to do this. And if you don't do it, he would just say you're holding it wrong.
Of course.
And, you know, I think it's just going to be a shift in how we do things. If this is what Apple decides to do, we will hold it up to our face first and then put it up to the reader.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that could be an option. Having it scan your face and then process the transaction. Yeah. Although at that point, instead of just simply holding your iPhone out to have Apple Pay activate, you may have to do something first.
You might.
Which
one sense
would suck, because now you're adding in extra steps. So yeah. It becomes less convenient. Yeah.
And I'll be honest. I mean, Apple Pay is slow sometimes. Sometimes it's faster for me just to pull out my credit card.
Yeah. And, so convenience just all the way around is something Apple needs to address if they want people to really use Apple Pay. Right. Here's another problem that I see with using facial recognition.
Okay.
There's a lot of places around Boulder that are using Square, you know, like the commercial Square setup where you have the iPad and the separate card reader that does the chip and all that. And what they do, that little separate reader that they have, it's built like a wedge. So the high point of the wedge has the slot where you put the credit card in so it can read the chip. The wedge itself, the face of the wedge, that's where you hold your phone out to do Apple Pay.
Okay.
What all of these companies are doing is spinning it so that the high point of the wedge, so the backside of the reader, is facing out, so that it's easy to slide the chip card in for the customer.
Right.
Which means that when you're doing Apple Pay, you hold your phone at this funky angle where it's like laying down away from you.
Yeah.
So you
can
do Touch ID. And a lot of these places that I go to, this was the compromise that they made to actually get their employees to use the card reader system at all.
Gotcha.
And I just don't see these places moving stuff around. I know it's this trivial little thing, just spin the stupid box around. But I just don't see a lot of these places doing it, because it's actually been a fight to get employees to embrace that there's this extra box there, and then to accept that customers are going to use Apple Pay. I mean, in many cases, I've pulled out my phone and had the person behind the terminal tell me, oh, don't use that. And it's because they've got the perception that this isn't reliable, it's not safe, they don't like it, whatever it is. And they tell me not to use it, and I do it anyhow, and it works very quickly, and it's done. And they always seem surprised. So, anyhow, but that's a totally different problem to overcome.
Yeah.
So, all right, I get why there's a lot of people that are freaking out about this. And I get why there's people that are saying, if Apple doesn't include Touch ID on the iPhone 8, they will not buy the phone.
Right.
But I think that Gruber has the right idea. We need to be more pragmatic about this.
We need to be more open. You know, we need to be more open-minded and wait and see.
Right.
I mean, worrying about it isn't going to make the iPhone 8 or the iPhone 10 or the iPhone Edition or whatever it's called. It ain't going to come any faster.
No, it's not. And I recall there were people that questioned Touch ID before we got to really play with that. People wondered if it was going to be usable at all, if mm-hmm. people would even adopt it.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. There were a ton of us who questioned the idea of a virtual keyboard back when the first iPhone came out.
Oh, that's true.
I was one of them.
And I did not question it, but that's because before the iPhone, I had never bought a smartphone. The BlackBerry didn't appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, when I got to the point where I was ready to buy a Treo, the rumors that Apple had something coming were already out. So I was holding off.
Right.
So I went from you know, a Motorola Razr flip phone to an iPhone.
Okay.
So I didn't have that preconceived notion that the physical keyboard could be bad. But I totally get, or excuse me, the virtual keyboard. I totally get why there was a lot of people saying, no, this is ridiculous. It'll never work. I mean, how can you touch type? And sure.
Yeah. I was a BlackBerry user. And I thought I was happy with my BlackBerry.
And I bet you were also thinking it was ridiculous that the iPhone didn't have a removable battery.
Oh, yeah. I laughed like crazy at that.
And a lot of people did. And now look at how many Samsung phones you buy where you mm-hmm. can't remove the battery.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
You know, that was the only way we had to reboot our phones when they locked up.
Yeah, I remember having to do that on old phones. I remember the first time I had a phone that totally locked up and I didn't know what to do. And I had to call T-Mobile. Yeah, it would have been T-Mobile at the time. And I'm like, I've never had a phone lock up. What do I do? And the guy's like, oh, yep, just pull the battery out. And it just seemed like the most ridiculous thing to me. First, that my phone would lock up, and then second, that I had to pull a battery out to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun times.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, let's take Gruber's advice, and let's wait and see.
Yep.
Yeah. And if Brian were here, he would be saying, oh, Jeff, just let it go, because we know that regardless of how trepidatious I might be or wary of whatever features the iPhone 8 may or may not have, you're just going to buy it and you're going to love it and just accept it.
Insert Futurama, take my money, please.
Yeah. All right. Hey, one of the things that you've been doing lately that I think is really cool is messing around, well, not just lately, for quite a while, you've been messing around with...
Yeah.
The Hackintosh scene.
That's how I got started on the Mac, man.
Yeah. So So I kind of wanted to dive into this a little bit more because it's something that's come up in short little bits on mm-hmm. daily observations. But I mean, here we are, we've got time. We can like really talk about this. So I'm just going to start asking you questions if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So when you decided to do a Hackintosh initially, I mean, what was it that made you think you needed to do a Hackintosh as opposed to go buy a new or use Mac?
Well, I was a grad student and mm-hmm. I didn't have that kind of money laying around. It was smack dab in the middle of finals week. I had a Dell Inspiron laptop that decided to take a dirt nap on me. Well, not the laptop, Windows.
Oh, okay.
Decided to take a dirt nap on me. And I was frustrated. I was behind schedule. I'd been procrastinating for half the semester like I always do. And, you know, some people, when they get frustrated, when they get stressed out, they start drinking.
Uh-huh.
I void warranties.
I love that.
Yeah. And I'd already done my time with Linux. You know, I'd been working with Linux since the early to mid 90s. And it was just, I was bored. I wanted something that was a little more challenging, a little more exciting. And my wife hated it because it meant I was up all night when I should have been in bed.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked. I found a Hackintosh build. I installed it on this Dell Inspiron, and it worked. And it only took me one night to get it working. And I mean, full graphics acceleration, sound, Wi-Fi, Ethernet, everything worked right away.
So you took this old Dell laptop. And I say old because this is several years ago now when you yep. did this.
This would have been in 2007 or 2008.
Okay. So you took a, we'll call it a 2007-ish PC laptop.
Yep.
And just converted it into a Mac.
Yeah.
And a totally
HackBook
worked.
Pro. It was a 17-inch HackBook Pro.
Oh, my God. There are people that would kill for that today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't easy. I had to do a lot of research, a lot of Googling. But I'll tell you what, it was the easiest Hackintosh build I've ever done.
Uh-huh.
I mean, compared to what I've been doing lately, it was a cakewalk.
That's... Yes. Okay. So you've done more since then. I got slow for a minute because I'm just sitting here picturing this, like this one day you're like, what a load of crap. My computer just died in the middle of everything that I need to have working
mm-hmm.
and I'm screwed. And your response was, screw this. I'm making it into a Mac.
Yeah.
And then you did, and it just worked.
And I got all of my assignments done for finals week and had a perfect 4.0 semester.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so you've messed around with the Hackintosh scene since then.
Yep.
And where would you say we are today?
You know what? We're reversing course, but then we're also possibly making some forward progress. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, you know, Apple used to be fairly forgiving about hardware because they had a lot of hardware out there.
Mm-hmm.
They used ATI. They used NVIDIA. Of course, ATI is now AMD. And they may have even utilized Intel at some point down the road for their graphics.
Mm-hmm.
So it
they have Intel for graphics because
The MacBook Air.
Yeah, the onboard chipset. Well, even on a MacBook Pro, you have the built-in Intel chipset graphics plus the video card.
Yeah.
And you roll back to the Intel chipset when you're on battery, or you know, unless you change other configurations.
Right.
Settings.
Right.
So yeah, Intel as well.
So yeah. So there were a lot of graphics, and that's the biggest problem that we see in the Hackintosh world is getting the graphics to work right. Mm-hmm. Second biggest is wireless. There's an Intel wireless chipset that has never worked on a Hackintosh build and probably never will, even though it works beautifully under Linux.
And it's the same chipset.
Mm-hmm. Exact same chipset. The machine that I have right now, that's my current Hackintosh project, under Linux, the wireless works perfectly. And so does Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
Under macOS, not so much. Wireless doesn't work at all. Bluetooth might be working under High Sierra. I need to do further testing.
Okay, so we're now diving a little deeper than my knowledge base goes with the whole Hackintosh scene.
Okay.
Is this problem something because Apple has intentionally blocked the ability for these standard chipsets to work with anything but macOS?
Or? Yeah, in a sense, the drivers aren't there. And to make your own drivers is a pretty serious undertaking.
But if it's a standard chipset that Apple's already using, you'd think it would just be in the operating system.
But it's not. That's the problem. Is Apple only uses a handful of wireless and graphics chipsets. Yes, they use different manufacturers, but there are so many more video cards and Wi-Fi cards out there on the market for the PC world that Apple has never used. And to cut down on the bloat within the operating system, they don't bother making drivers for them. Because why would they? You're not supposed to install macOS on non-Apple hardware.
Okay, so I think I've got it now. So
okay.
Apple is intentionally stripping out all the other driver stuff that's not specific for their own hardware.
Right.
And so that streamlines the operating system, cuts down on how much space the operating system needs,
mm-hmm.
Both in memory and on your SSD or hard drive.
Right.
The side effect of that is that if you're using non-Apple hardware, there's a lot of stuff that isn't going to work unless you roll your own driver for it.
Right. And Mavericks and El Capitan and even Yosemite were a lot more forgiving of hardware than macOS Sierra is right now.
Well, at this point...
But here's the fun thing.
Okay.
Okay, so High Sierra seems to be opening the door again. For example, SSD storage that's plugged straight into the PCI bus is mm-hmm. called NVMe.
Okay.
Used to be, if you didn't have an Apple manufactured or Apple sold NVMe drive or NVMe controller, you had to patch Apple's drivers and install third-party drivers to get your own to work.
Oh, okay.
That's no longer necessary in High Sierra.
Okay.
And I think it's because this Mac Pro that Apple is developing right now is going to be modular and it's going to be more user upgradable.
Oh, I hope so.
I do too. And, you know, it's great for people who buy the Mac Pro, but it's even better for Hackintosh people. Because now we don't have to roll our own drivers for so much of the stuff.
All right. Okay. So that makes sense. If Apple's making the architecture more open, then by extension, that means it's more open for everything.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. So if someone decided they just wanted to get into making a Hackintosh, like they've never done this before, where do they start?
They would start by reading my articles.
That seems like a good place to start.
Yeah. You know, I've outlined some good video cards to start with that are supported. You know, NVIDIA has actually started putting out their own drivers, beta drivers, and we're able to get those to work under Hackintosh. Some devices don't work, even though it's a supported chipset. In my current build, I've got a Maxwell chipset in my NVIDIA card. For whatever reason, it won't work. But I'm close to getting it to work, I think. I just need NVIDIA to come out with one more set of beta drivers, and then I'll know for sure. Okay. Motherboard, anything with the almost anything with a Z170 Intel chipset should work pretty well, or really any 100 series Intel chipset should work pretty well for a Hackintosh system.
All right, and that's the sort of thing where if you decide you're going to go look, like we'll just say you're shopping on Amazon for parts. You could just type in Intel Z100 chipset motherboard.
Yeah.
And it would find something that you could use.
Until I get my ideal build made, which I'm working on as we speak, I would recommend looking through the buyer's guide at TonyMacX86.com.
Hold on, I'm writing that down because that needs to go in the show notes. TonyMacX86.com.
They have a really good buyer's guide. It lists a lot of options. Temporary solution, look there. Future, I hope to have a good pro build that won't break the bank outlined on the Mac Observer, hopefully within a matter of a month or two.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
So essentially, people could go read the article, and then they just have a shopping list. Go get this stuff, and you're going to be able to make a really good Hackintosh for this amount of money.
They won't even need a shopping list, because I'll include Amazon links.
Oh, beautiful.
Yep.
Okay, so one thing that I've always wondered about is, once you get all this hardware together, it's not like you can just stick an installer disk into the computer and put Mac OS on. Am I correct?
No, it's not that easy. You have to trick Mac OS into thinking you're installing it on a Mac. And you do that. There's a couple of things that you have to do in order to do that.
Okay.
One is you have to have a custom bootloader. That's what actually feeds information to the operating system or to the installer and says, this is what I am. And this is what I have.
Okay.
And there are a couple choices out there, but my favorite, and it, you know, it's relatively new in the Hackintosh world, but it seems to be the most developed and most mature already. And that's Clover. The other thing that you need, and Clover provides this for you, is a special driver called fakesmc.kext. And that basically fakes the system management controller that is installed inside of every Mac.
Okay.
And a PC doesn't have it.
Okay. So now, let's say you use Clover, and so this is going to let you get Mac OS installed on the Hackintosh you've made.
Yep.
You don't have a working computer yet. So how do you use Clover?
Well, you have to start from a Mac.
Okay. So if you don't have a Mac, you need to find a friend that's going to let you use theirs.
Yep.
Okay.
And you download the Mac OS installer, and there's a program that makes this blindingly easy. I do it by hand. I actually dig into the installer file and find there's a little program inside it called Create Install Media. And I use that to create my install USB stick. But you don't have to. There's a program that Tony Mac x86 has called Unibeast that does that for you.
Unibeast.
And it also puts Clover on your USB stick. It puts the right drivers on your USB stick. It does everything you need. And you just plug that into your PC, boot off of that USB stick. And if all goes well, you're installing macOS Sierra.
Okay. So just make sure that I'm still up to speed. You've got all your hardware ready to go. You've built the computer. There's no Mac OS on it yet, but you have another Mac available to you through whatever means. You can sit down with this utility, probably for your cheap, called Unibeast.
And, it's free.
And okay, so free, even better.
Yep.
And then it will put everything together on a USB stick for you so that you can install Mac OS on the Hackintosh you've just made.
Right.
And I'm assuming that it'll be more than a couple clicks to put it together, but it will be pretty simple or at least straightforward on everything you need to do to let Unibeast do its thing.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. You just follow. Basically, you have to click agree like 8 times to go through all of the different license agreements and disclaimers and non-liability disclaimers. But once it's done, you've got this USB stick, and the beauty is you can add more stuff to it. And I recommend that you do, because after you do your install, you're still going to need to install some drivers, and probably. And that's where another utility that Tony Mac x86 has, called Multibeast, comes into play. Multibeast will let you choose what drivers you need. It installs them, and you're good to go.
Okay. So basically what this comes down to is you don't need to be a super deep PC wizard, in essence, to figure out how to make this happen. You need to know where to go and get a couple tools.
Yeah.
And
you need to have the right hardware.
And you need to have the right hardware. And once you've got that, then it's a relatively straightforward process to take all of this stuff and put it together and have a working Hackintosh.
And there's a huge community that's built around Hackintosh. And believe it or not, some of the work that's been done in the Hackintosh community, Apple has rolled into macOS.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding. If you ever look in your system library extensions folder at the NVIDIA drivers, one of them actually has the name Rehab Man on it, or inside the info.plist file within it. And Rehab Man is one of the top developers in the Hackintosh community.
No kidding.
No kidding.
All right, so on one hand, that's really cool that Apple is open to looking to see what the Hackintosh community is doing, so that they can improve the, I'm doing air quotes, the official Mac platform.
Yep.
But on the other hand, is that Apple like stealing from the community?
You know what? I don't know. You know, I like to think that Apple actually paid Rehab Man some royalty rights for these drivers. But considering the fact that he's violating the Digital Millennium Copyright Act by hacking OS X and Mac OS, they probably don't have to.
But they did leave a recognition to him.
They did leave. They did give credit where credit was due.
All right. Well, I guess sometimes that's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
All right. So let's say you have everything together so that you can build your Hackintosh. And you've done your homework and you have everything set up with Unibeast, Multibeast. How long does it take? Excuse me. How long does it take to go from having the parts to having a working Mac?
Oh, goodness. Let's see.
Is this something that if I sat down one evening before I go to bed, I could have a working Mac? Assuming that I follow your advice and I buy all the right parts.
Right. If you buy all the right parts, if you're comfortable building a computer, you know, if you've built your own PC before, and you know exactly how to put all the pieces together and you don't make any mistakes, figure a half hour to assemble the computer.
Okay.
And then 2.5 hours to install Mac OS, maybe less than that.
All right. So realistically, you could sit down at 6 PM and take a break somewhere along the way in the middle of this. And by 10 o'clock, you could be booting into Mac OS on your Hackintosh.
Potentially, yeah. It might not be completely functional. But just by way of example, you know, the current project that I have, while I wait to get all of the parts I need for my custom build, I was able to get Mac OS running without graphics acceleration, without Wi-Fi, but everything else was working in about an hour.
That's pretty cool.
Granted, this machine is a workstation class mini computer with an ultra fast processor, NVMe storage, which is 3 to 4 times faster than SATA or SSD over the SATA port. And I think it took me about an hour.
All right. So the big thing that I'm getting out of this is that as long as you do a little bit of research ahead of time, that and a little bit of preparation ahead of time, building a Hackintosh is not as big of a deal as you might think.
No. I mean, it's not a trivial task, but I mean, I didn't go to school to learn how to do this stuff. I taught myself how to build computers in my early 20s. If you're brand new and you've never built a computer before, count on it taking you a couple hours to get all the pieces together.
You know, my advice there is if you're brand new and have never built a computer before, there's a really good chance you have friends that have. Invite them over and have a computer building party where they teach you.
And if that's not an option, I do consult. You pay my airfare. Not the most cost-effective way to get a PC built, but you know.
Yeah, but getting time to hang out with you,
absolutely,
that's worth a lot right there.
Absolutely, and you can tell all your friends that Jeff Butts from the Mac Observer built my Hackintosh.
See, that's worth some street cred right there.
Well, yeah, because I'm a legend in my own mind,
and we all have to start somewhere.
That's right.
That's right. All right, so I feel like I've basically just drug you through the ringer on Hackintosh.
Hey, man, no ringer at all. Hacking is my passion. I love talking about it.
And this is why I wanted to talk about this today, because we were going to have more than just a couple minutes, so we could like really go deep into this.
Yep.
And we still have about 10 minutes left, so we haven't had a chance to really talk about experiences with High Sierra Beta.
Yeah.
And
that's fun.
Yeah, and so I'm running High Sierra Beta on a MacBook Air, and I just forgot what year it is. I want to say it's 2013.
I thought you said it was a 2011.
Or it's a 2011. Well, both are prime numbers, so
yeah.
Either
one works.
Yeah, and my experience installing it was completely non-eventful. I mean, like seriously, it installed It converted to APFS Plus, or no, it's just APFS, HFS just Plus, APFS, which is the new format for the drive, replacing HFS Plus.
Yep, Apple File System.
And it was just fine. It just happened. And really, the biggest problems that I'm having right now relate to app incompatibilities. And to be clear, I am not complaining about any developer, because I totally get that when an operating system changes, stuff with third-party apps can get kind of borked. Yeah. And I have a few apps that have become crashy, a couple apps that just don't work at all right now. And that's okay, because I'm rushing in where angels fear to tread.
Sure.
And but, I mean, other than the things that I would expect to see as an issue, it's fine. Oh, here's one place where I have had a consistent problem. If I let the battery drain completely and while the computer is on, and then plug the power cord back in so it starts charging again, my MacBook Air is not coming back gracefully. And typically, really? I have to force a reboot.
Ooh, that's ugly.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're talking early beta stuff here.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm not complaining about that either. It's just an observation. This is one of the beta experiences I'm having.
Oh, sure. I've got it installed on my Hackintosh as well as on my 2010 Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. My only two computers, because I'm stupid that way. but the only problem I've seen on the Mac Mini, and that problem has gone away since I installed the public beta.
Okay.
And that is that if the display would go to sleep, it would lock up the system, and I'd have to hard reboot it to get it to come back up.
Okay. Now, were you running developer beta before?
I was running the developer beta before, and I believe I installed the public beta on the Mac Mini. I know I installed it on the Hackintosh, but I think I installed it on the Mac Mini as well.
Okay. So, all right. Well, and at some point, a beta update addressed your problem.
Yep.
All right. So what's your experience overall?
You know, it's pretty good. It's been pretty solid. I haven't had any app incompatibilities. The only apps I run that weren't compatible at first, to my recollection, is just iMazing. And the latest, I'm also running the iOS 11 beta, so that was going to be a bag of hurt anyways.
Yeah.
But iMazing was very quick to come out with a beta of their own software of both iMazing and iMazing Mini that works flawlessly with iOS 11.
All right, so I need to install that beta on my MacBook Air.
Yeah.
I just haven't done that yet.
Yeah. And it's hard to find. You have to go to the iMazing Mini website, which is iMazing.com/mini. Click the download link, and then you'll see the iMazing full beta as well as the iMazing Mini beta. If you just go to the iMazing beta page, it says that the beta is closed.
Oh, all right. Well, then how about we put a link to actually get to the beta in the show notes?
Absolutely. I think good
that's
idea.
A great plan. Yeah.
Great minds think alike.
Yes, indeed. All right.
That's the only problem I've had.
Okay. That's pretty impressive, because, you know, we're talking about early betas.
Right.
We're talking about an operating system that isn't scheduled to ship until later this year.
September or October.
Yeah. And
now, I did have more problems. You know, it was problematic on the Hackintosh, but even that has gone away as of the public beta.
Okay. So that totally supports your feeling that the operating system is getting a little more open.
And it's getting more open. Yeah. Yeah. Because when I first put the beta, the High Sierra beta on my Hackintosh, I had to use Carbon Copy Cloner to make an image of my Mac Mini's installation and install that on the Hackintosh.
Oh, that's
now,
clever.
Now, oh, well, you know, that's what happens when you spend all night looking at Reddit and other forums, Insanely Mac and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the developer beta, I was able to download the developer beta on the Hackintosh, launch the installer, let it do its thing, and then just know which partition to choose to boot from to continue the installation.
That's really nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here's one thing that I'm looking forward to getting to play with, and I haven't had time to really commit to doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's external video cards with the MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And that's something that's officially supported in High Sierra. In Sierra, using an external chassis that plugs into your Thunderbolt 3 port.
Right.
That's something that companies have figured out how to make work. But in High Sierra, that's officially supported.
It is. And that's why I think there are more video drivers opening up. Because, you know, the problem every time a new version of Mac OS or OS X came out, you know, there were models that were rendered obsolete. So Apple would pull those video drivers out if they weren't being used in another model.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're having to put a lot of those video drivers back in or rely on the manufacturers to make them.
Well, I like the idea that we're going to have a lot more flexibility in video cards with mm-hmm. High Sierra.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
Of course, for a while, it's not going to matter for me, other than my Hackintosh, because my MacBook is a PowerBook G4.
Yeah, but you've got that thing running Linux like a champ, right?
I do. Oh, man. It's great.
I'm looking forward to seeing that, because I'm going to be at Mac Stock in a couple weeks.
Really? What a coincidence. Me too.
I know. Yeah. So actually, listeners, if you're heading to Mac Stock, I'll be there. Dave will be there. Brian will be there. And Jeff's going to be there hanging out too. So if you want to check out his, I'm totally volunteering you to show off your computer.
Yeah, if anybody wants to see Debian trusty tar running with the Mate desktop environment, which if you know Linux at all, that's the GNOME desktop continued after GNOME went its own separate way from what it used to be. That's what I have.
That's really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yep. It's pretty sweet.
Cool. All right. We're out of time. So,
dagnabbit.
I know. This happens on TDO every day, and apparently it happens every week on Apple Context Machine, too.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yes, it does. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything, if you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today. I've had so much fun going under the hood and getting all technical with you today.
I love being geeky.
This was a lot of fun. And what I'm betting is that there will be a few people now that are going to take on the Hackintosh mantle themselves.
May God have mercy on their souls. they'll become addicted.
Yes. Yes, they will. All right. Hey, listeners, stay subscribed, and we will see you online at the Mac Observer.